Franker, and I'm a jolly banker. I'm a jolly banker am I. I safeguard the farmers and widows and orphans, singing, I'm a jolly banker, jolly banker am I. When dust storms are sailing and crops they are failing, I'm a jolly banker, jolly banker am I. I check up your shortage and bring down your mortgage, singing, I'm a jolly banker, jolly banker am I. When money you're needing and mouths you are feeding, I'm a jolly banker am I. I'll plaster your home with a furniture loan, singing, I'm a jolly banker am I. If you show me you need it, I'll let you have credit. I'm a jolly banker am I. Just bring me back two for the one I lend you, singing, I'm a jolly banker, jolly banker.
Anyway, they got all these hundreds of trillions of dollars worth of derivative products that have been accumulating off the balance sheet in the shadow banking system, and now they're exploding, and the Ponzi scheme is collapsing, the pyramid scheme is collapsing, and this is destroying the banks, and the banks therefore are not making any loans because their balance sheets are exploding because of the accumulation of all this worthless paper, and companies can't meet their payrolls, can't meet their expenses, so laying people off. Unemployment's going higher, and the economy is collapsing. It's similar to the 1930s depression in a lot of ways, and it's dissimilar in other ways. But the way it's similar is that you got unemployment is skyrocketing, people can't get money for stuff, tent cities are popping up, bankruptcies are skyrocketing. Those are the similarities you find that are happening right now around the world. You've got this global depression-like situation. Now there's a mad dash to see if, in fact, the credit collapse is going to usher in a period of protracted deflation, or whether the mad credit collapse is going to reverse itself on a dime, and all that money that's being used to bail out the banks hits the real economy, and we see a period of hyperinflation.
And, you know, another very important thing that happened that is similar to the Great Depression was the wealth and income gap.
Yeah.
Now, this is something that has been signaled to the market for the last 2 years. How many times did you hear from various, like, UN organizations that the wealth and income gap had hit a dangerous level, not since the 1920s? Have we seen a wealth and income gap similar to this?
Yeah.
And the important thing, why it was important, and what they should have been more blatant about and forthright about, is that, you know, the wealthy class is those that own the means of production and the things that are sold, whether it was collateralized debt obligations or a Ford Escort.
Well, the means of production was the ability at the investment bank to float credit default swaps. I mean, what America produces are junk paper.
Yeah, it doesn't matter whether it was junk or a real thing. The fact is they were selling something. These are the guys that sell something to somebody. The person who's doing the buying tends to be the poorer person. They're the ones that are the bottom of that wealth and income gap, I think. But anyway, so they're saying that what happens with this wealth and income gap, why it's important, is because when when the 1% owns too much, they tend to, they don't have anything to spend it on. It becomes a dead capital. And when the bottom of that pyramid has the inability to buy the things that these guys are selling, the whole thing falls apart because it reaches the critical point where the lower class can't afford the stuff that is being, or the middle class, more importantly, I guess, it can't afford the things that are being sold.
And what was Henry Ford's solution to that problem?
Exactly. Well, pay the workers enough to be able to buy the product they're making.
Now, as I look around, it's mighty plain to see this world is such a great and a funny place to be. All the gambling man is rich and the working man is poor, and I ain't got no home in this world anymore.
Do you want to really leave it up to a Treasury Secretary that has been so deceptive as to misrepresent everything, the problems that are facing America? Do you want to leave it to the discretion of a Secretary of Treasury that says, we have a liquidity problem, perfectly good mortgages at some price, it's just a little liquidity, that will not tell the people what every American seems to know by now, that it's a debt problem. Every American knows that if there's a higher mortgage than the value of the property, nobody's going to lend money. Because most Americans know they can't get mortgage loans, they can't get car loans, they can't get personal loans, they can't get new credit card loans. They know that there's no money available at all. And that the reason is that when they asked the bank, why not? The bank said, well, we've looked at your income, and you're already loaned up. You're already paying 40% of your income for housing and debt. You're already paying another 20% just for student loans, health loans, personal loans, car loans, credit card arrears. There's no more slack left in the economy. The debt overhead is absorbing now the entire economic surplus. There isn't any more that people can do. And so now the time for foreclosures come. Now is the time for the upper 1% to sharply increase its holdings, its degree of wealth and income. The Congressional Record Office has estimated that 10 years ago, the wealthiest 1% of America's population owned 37% of all revenue from wealth, interest, dividends, and capital gains. 5 years ago, they'd increased this so that the upper 1% owns 57% of America's wealth. The estimate is today that the top 1% of the population now owns almost 70% of all the American wealth. Now, just think of it. This is like a banana republic. It's like a third world kleptocracy. 1% of Americans owning almost 70% of all of the income from wealth.
Drain the people, drain them dry, yai, yai. Drain the people, watch them die, yai, yai. I took a walk through the stately insane. I stopped to watch the procession of pain. The people burned, but the kingdom remained, and all the lovers united with the ball and the chain. Oh, to ring the people, train them cry. To ring the people, hear them cry. To ring the people, train them cry. To ring the people, watch them die. I climbed the hill near the valley of sin to watch the people swim in eels and pins. The Lord above sent a message to me. Although it sounded like freedom, it was just liberty. To reign the people, bring them dry. To reign the people, hear them cry. To reign the people, train them dry.
This is hundreds of billions of dollars that are just being awarded to bankers from bankers.
Mm-hmm.
There's no accountability. There's no visibility. You don't know what exactly they're doing with the money. There is a continuing credit crunch. So clearly the money is not going into lubricating the mechanics of the interbank market. So therefore, there's only one conclusion. It's being it's going down into the rabbit hole of interbank fraud that has been committed in the last 10 to 15 years on an egregious scale, unlike anything we've seen in history. And this is a big wild card. How far down does the rabbit hole go? How big is the black hole of fraudulent parallel banking market, the black market and derivative products? How big is the black market?
Drain the people, drain them dry, drain the people, watch them die, watch them die, watch them die,
Goldman Sachs knows that they're raping America. They do it by design. They're rapists. They're financial rapists and arsonists. And the fact that they're allowed to continue in the American economy as without being pilloried or hung up and flogged is a testament to the hubris and the ego that is at the core of the American problem. Unfortunately, because of unbroken years of expansion around the world and imperialistic expansion around the world by American bankers, they have developed this sense of immortality. And nobody right now is doing anything to stop it. So this is not going to stop.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say the joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth.
What is a machine? The scientific definition of a machine is a device which transmits or modifies something. A corporation modifies the behavior of the stockholders, directors, employees, vendors, and customers. Therefore, a corporation is a machine. A machine that must burn fossil fuel to survive. When people serve a corporate machine, they are actually condemning their families to a horrible future, because fossil fuel depletion will cause a violent armed struggle over what remains. Corporations exist to make money. In order to make money, they must deplete fossil fuels. However, with the depletion of fossil fuels, that money will become worthless. Employees of corporations look like ordinary people, but they are not, because they must act in ways that serve the corporation. In other words, employees behave like a mix of man and machine, or like machine components. All activity of the corporation wastes fossil fuel, because the efficiency of engines is limited by universal energy laws. A typical engine in an automobile, bulldozer, truck, or power plant wastes more than half of the energy contained in its fuel. Commuting by auto is fantastically inefficient. Less than 1% of the energy in the tank moves the driver. 90% is lost between the tank and the wheels, and the rest is used to push the mass of the vehicle. The same inefficiency applies to hybrid vehicles. Since corporations control our political system with gifts, the mass media, and especially lobbyists, these corporations are literally beyond human control. In their relentless pursuit of money, corporations will continue to deplete fossil fuels until they go bankrupt. Corporations will ingest natural resources and defecate garbage until resources are depleted, debt can no longer be repaid, and our money becomes worthless. Studies have found that 99% of everything manufactured is in the dump 6 months later. Corporations are larger than countries. 51 of the 100 largest economies in the world are corporations. It's their business to convert the planet into garbage before going bankrupt. Okay, let's review what we have learned. Number 1. The people involved with corporations, the stockholders, directors, employees, and vendors, are powerless to act against the corporation. These cripples are little more than machine components. Number 2. Corporations own our political system and are beyond human control. Number 3. Corporations exist to make money. In order to make money, they must deplete fossil fuels. When fossil fuels are depleted, money will be worthless and corporations bankrupt. Is it possible to stop the corporations and their human components?
Do not arouse the wrath of the great and powerful Oz. I said come back tomorrow.
If you were really great and powerful, you'd keep your promises.
Do you presume to criticize the great Oz? You ungrateful creatures, think yourselves lucky that I'm giving you audience tomorrow instead of 20 years from now.
President Bush signed a formal agreement that will end the United States as we know it. And he took the step without approval from either the U.S. Congress or the people of the United States.
It's a deal that few have even heard of.
It's being done again by very few people at the very top on behalf of the investment class, but the working class of people, political officials across our country from communities, from cities and so forth, they don't know anything about this.
This isn't some trade agreement. It is a total removal of sovereignty from these countries, which will also result in a completely new currency called the Amero.
Apart from that, I think one thing people who are dollar-based need to focus on is the Amero. That's the one thing that nobody's talking about that I think is going to have a big impact on everybody's life in Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. The Amero is the proposed new currency for the North American community, which is being developed right now between Canada, the U.S., and Mexico to make a borderless community much like the EU, and the dollar, Canadian dollar, U.S. dollar, and the Mexican peso replaced by the Amero.
By default of this agreement, the American Constitution will eventually be obsolete. You would think that a situation like this would be on the cover of every major newspaper. That is until you realize that the people who are behind this movement are the same people behind the mainstream media, and you are not told what you're not supposed to know. The North American Union is the same concept as the European Union, the African Union, and the soon-to-be Asian Union, and the same people are behind all of them. And when the time is right, the North American Union, the European Union, the African Union, and the Asian Union will be merged together, forming the final stages of a plan these men have been working on for over 60 years. A one-world government.
Save your sons and daughters.
one bank, one army, one center of power. And if we have learned anything from history, it is that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. This is Aaron Russo, a filmmaker and former politician. To his left is Nicholas Rockefeller of the infamous Rockefeller Banking and Business Dynasty. After maintaining a close friendship with Nicholas Rockefeller, Aaron eventually ended the relationship, appalled by what he had learned about the Rockefellers and their ambitions.
I got a call one day from an attorney woman I knew, and she said, "Would you like to meet one of the Rockefellers?" I said, "Sure, I'd love to." And we became friends, and he began to divulge a lot of things to me. So he said to me one night, he said that there's going to be an event there, and out of that event, you're going to see we're going to go into Afghanistan, so we run pipelines from the Caspian Sea. We're going to go into Iraq to take the oil and establish a base in the Middle East, and we're going to go into Venezuela and try and get rid of Chavez. And the first two they've accomplished, Chavez they didn't accomplish, and he said you're going to see guys going into caves looking for people that they're never going to find. You know, he was laughing about the fact that you have this war on terror. There's no real enemy. He's talking about how by having this war on terror, you can never win it because it's an eternal war. And so you can always keep taking people's liberties away. And I said, how are you going to convince people that this war is real? He said, but the media. The media can convince everybody it's real. I mean, you know, it's just that you keep talking about things. You keep saying it over and over and over again, and eventually people believe it. You know, you created the Federal Reserve in 1913 through lies. You create 9/11, which is another lie. Through 9/11, you're fighting a war on terror, and now all of a sudden you go into Iraq, which was another lie, and now they're going to do Iran.
With the principles of doublethink. It does not matter if the war is not real, or when it is, victory is not possible. The war is not meant to be won. It is meant to be continuous. The essential act of modern warfare is the destruction of the produce of human labor. A hierarchical society is only possible on the basis of poverty and ignorance. In principle, the war effort is always planned to keep society on the brink of starvation. The war is waged by the ruling group against its own subjects, and its object is not victory over Eurasia or East Asia, but to keep the very structure of society intact.
We're heading toward a showdown, basically. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a massive showdown, which will echo the American Revolution of 1776 period. So there's going to be an echo event from that event. You know, first, as Condoleezza Rice said, America was birth was accompanied by a birth defect in that the black population was not given the rights of everyone else. Now that birth defect has been overcome, but now we need to go back and understand that the Revolutionary War for America that established the country. Has some additional business that it needs to get done. So there's going to be some kind of event. I don't know how it's going to take place. I mean, you could have people out on the streets with sticks, but of course, you know, the odds are against them given the recent events with the U.S. is returning battle-hardened troops from Iraq to serve in the streets of the U.S. You've got these detention pens that have been built up. We saw in the Republican National Committee's convention to nominate John McCain to run for president. They had established the precedent of police forces able to buy insurance against crimes that they had not yet committed. So there's that financial aspect to this neo-feudal model that is onerous. So I'm not sure exactly how it's going to take place. I mean, I know that there's going to be a showdown of some kind of showdown is in the works. And right now, the odds are very much stacked against the people who have had their economy stolen from them by the banks essentially taking the entire country private. I'm not sure how the showdown is going to play out. I mean, the usual, it's a different world than it was 200 years ago. So I'm not sure how the conflict is going to take shape. I mean, there's especially also the population is extremely distrustful of each other, you know, because of the mass media that's out there every single day pounding the table about why your neighbor is to blame for your problems. So the propaganda in America is unbelievably, you know, powerful. So I'm not sure how the conflict is going to take place. I mean, either that or it's just a euthanasia operation. It's just the major banks are going to put, you know, the remaining souls in America peacefully to sleep, and they'll just retreat into a like Monaco situation, a state run by billionaires.
Well, it seems they've had quite a few decades that they've been preparing for this moment between decimating the education system. So you do have many functionally illiterate Americans who are extremely uneducated, extremely overweight. You know that that's basically eliminated them as a threat to your feudalism.
Yeah.
So that's half the population.
Mm-hmm.
That leaves the other half of the population. You know, if you look at any of the founding fathers and what their statements were, what some of their writings were, you know, they predicted this, the seizure by the private bankers. Remember, they're a bigger danger to America than a standing army.
Mm.
And it apparently happens throughout history. And throughout history, the result has always been revolution. Whether or not that would possibly happen in America, who knows? You know, it might take another few decades of, you know, it has to reach a critical mass maybe of people living under the bridge and, you know, starving. I don't know. It takes quite a lot.
Well, you know, if you look at historical precedents, you find, you know, one of the recurring themes is a brain drain. So these countries that have been subjected to a coup d'etat from the banking establishments, typically the smart people leave. You know, you see this, you saw this in Argentina, you saw this in Nazi Germany, you saw this in countries all over the world. When there is a coup d'etat and the rebels and the charlatans take over, the smart people get out of town. So I'd imagine there will be a bit of a brain drain in America where anyone who can will leave, and hopefully they'll try to take their wealth with them. But I think the noose is getting tighter. I saw that, for example, moving sums in excess of $600,000 out of the U.S. is now problematic. And I would imagine that collar, that limit will continue to shrink down to 500,
400, 300, etc. Hard time. My mother's having a hard time, hard time. She's got children sweet to raise, not a nickel on the place. My mother's having a hard and hard time. And my sister's having a hard time, hard time. Sisters have me hard, oh, hard time. When sister blows her nose on her clothes, when it shows that my sister's having a hard and hard time. Everybody's having a hard time, hard time. Everybody's having a hard time. I'm asking you, Lord, what are we gonna do, Lord? Everybody's having a hard time.